All right, welcome to the West Courtroom panel. Let's see. No, it is Tuesday because of the Final Four, so throws our chemistry off with it, but we're glad that we've got a courtroom full. Been a while since we've had lots of people in. I'm wonderfully blessed to be sitting with Judge Edith Clement and Judge Jennifer Elrod for a full bevy of cases this week, wide variety all around. I'm pretty sure that everybody assembled, knows the routine, so I won't go through that. Main thing is to make sure you stay in the mic so we can be sure to hear you and pick up the questions. Other than that, we're ready to go, so we'll call the first case, number 21-20202, Scott Eason et al. Versus U.S. Well Services. Mr. Assad, is that correct?
May it please the court. The district court erred in a statutory interpretation of 29 U.S.C. 2102B titled Reduction of the Notification Period under the WARN Act, and also by not providing Chevron deference to the Department of Labor regulations in which the legislature expressly allocated power to. There are two questions before this court. The first question is, does COVID-19 qualify as a natural disaster under the WARN Act natural disaster exception? And question two is, does the WARN Act's natural disaster exception under 29 U.S.C. 2102b2b incorporate but-for or proximate causation? I will be addressing question one, and the United States will be addressing question two. Before I begin, I would just like to state that COVID-19 is a pandemic that has affected millions, if not tens of millions, of people in the United States, and in no way is appellant's position minimizing the seriousness of this pandemic. However, the focus the court should have should be on the WARN Act, its purpose, who it protects, and the intent of the natural disaster exception under the WARN Act. Under the WARN Act, it's appellant's position that COVID-19 should be qualified as an unforeseen business circumstance and not a natural disaster. I'll be discussing three things with respect to question one. First is the purpose of the WARN Act, how the exceptions should be narrowly construed, and finally, that COVID-19 does not qualify as a natural disaster under the WARN Act.
Does the term natural and natural disaster mean that man-made events do not qualify?
That has been, yes, Your Honor. I believe natural disaster should be a geographic or meteorological event by nature. And in fact, if you look at Merriam-Webster's definition of natural disaster, it is a sudden and terrible event in nature, such as hurricane, tornado, or flood, that usually results in serious damage.
The district court discussed the wet market situation and cited some sources for that. If the lab leak hypothesis about the origins of COVID-19 were true, and I'm not expressing an opinion on that, would that mean that COVID-19 was not a natural disaster definitively? And do you argue that here today, sir?
That's a very good question, Judge Elrod, and we're not arguing that. We're not going to go into the origins of natural disaster.
Why not? Wouldn't that be a silver bullet for your case?
I think the burden to prove that for anybody at this stage in history would be almost impossible. I don't think anyone could meet that burden, and I don't believe that the appellants need to go there, because if you look at, if you perform the proper statutory construction and look at the intent and the purpose, and in fact, this court in Carpenter District Council of New Orleans versus Dillard Department Stores Incorporated, 15 Federal 3rd, 1275, specifically stated, because the WARN Act is remedial legislation, its exceptions are construed narrowly. The three exceptions under the WARN Act are the faltering business, the unforeseen business circumstances, and the natural disaster. One must look at the entire statute to interpret the statute. The error in the district court was they only looked at one line and did not look at the purpose of the statute, the unforeseen business circumstances, and how the entire statute works together. And in fact, the defendant's position is for the court to only look at that one sentence and not look at the other sentences in the chapter in the statute. It goes against the most basic statutory canon. In determining the ordinary meaning of a statute, effect must be given to all words of the statute, if possible, so that none will be void, superfluous, or redundant. And again, let's go to the purpose of the Act. The Act was designed to provide employees who lose their jobs with some transition time to seek and obtain alternative jobs and, if necessary, to enter skill training or retraining to successfully compete in the job market. And also part of the purpose was to notify the employees, the state dislocated workers unit, and the chief elected official of the unit of local government, because funds are provided, emergency funds, to help people in mass layoffs or plant closings. And that's the purpose, to give these people a chance, not to destroy the economy of a town or a city because of a mass layoff.
Wasn't the employer contemplating letting these employees go for business reasons anyway?
Yes, and in fact, we believe, based on the evidence we have from the limited discovery, that they were considering letting these people go for a couple weeks before they actually let these people go. So with respect to notice, they could have provided notice in this case. They failed to do so, and it wasn't until the lawsuit that they decided to try to come under the natural disaster exception.
So if they were letting them go for business reasons, how many days' notice would they owe the employees?
In this particular case? Well, that question's not before the court, Your Honor, but I believe at least a few weeks, at least 2 weeks, if not more. I believe in this situation, the reason for the layoff was the appellant's position is because of the oil war between China and Russia and the Middle East regarding the price of oil. The price of oil was dropping before COVID even became an issue in March of 2020. And they were doing layoffs and laid off even some executives prior to this point. And at some point, the oil became at such a low level that it was an economic decision to lay the people off. So I think it's many compounding factors. I might even argue they had 60 days notice. And of course, the WARN Act is never a good financial decision for the employer. If it's up to the employer, they would lay off people as soon as possible because they're losing money. So it's never a good financial decision to delay layoffs as 60 days as the WARN Act requires. But it is a decision that Congress has made to protect employees and protect these people.
Two quick questions. Do we need to reach the second question if we agree with you on the first question? I understand that the DOL is going to discuss the second question. And I'm not foreshadowing, just, you know, if the other one is perhaps a harder question, do we need to reach it?
No, Your Honor, because the second question in this case would be irrelevant, because if it's not declared a natural disaster, then the only other possibility is unforeseen business circumstances, and the direct or indirect issues only applies to the natural disaster.
And second question, do we have to get to Chevron deference in the agency? You were making a plain text argument, weren't you? The first argument out of the box?
Yes and no, Your Honor. 3 years ago, if someone asked me what a natural disaster was, I think most people would not even include a pandemic. Now, because we're in the middle of a pandemic, some people might include it. So 3 years ago, the term natural disaster was not ambiguous. And I think at the time of the passing of the WARN Act, it wasn't ambiguous. So it was never meant to be. And if you look at the statutory canons outlined in our brief, the three canons, which are nascitur a socius, exitum generis, and expressio unis est exclusio alterius, all three point to the illustrations, which are all geologic. And I can explain those.
Look at the evolving word. We look at what the word meant at the time the statute was passed.
So yes.
It's irrelevant to some extent if the word meaning changes over time.
I agree with you 100%. At the time, the words they used were flood, earthquake, and drought currently ravaging the farmlands of the time. Pandemics were well known at the time of the passing of the statute. And we had the Spanish flu in the 20s that, you know, 5 to 10% of the country died from the Spanish flu. Congress was aware of pandemics, and therefore the fact that they excluded pandemics and only included geologic or meteorological events goes to our statutory.
Let me ask you this, related to where you're going. A council, U.S. Well, argues that COVID is a natural disaster because it, quote, emerged from nature, close quote. So in order for them to carry that, do they have to drill down, no pun intended, into the origin of the pandemic in order to connect up this natural part. You follow what I'm saying? I know your argument, no, you don't need to do it, but for them to make the case that it's, quote, natural, do they have to connect the dots on how it came about, whether in the lab or something else? In other words, is that an impossibility for them? So if they can't do that and show that it's spontaneous in nature, isn't that another response as to why?
I would like to leave that answer up to them.
Right.
I don't know the answer to that, but they're burning. But I believe that no one could ever prove it, so I believe you are correct that they'd have to show that it's a natural disaster. But one more thing I'd like to point out is even the regulations, even if the court believes that the statute is natural disaster may or may not include a pandemic, the regulations are also quite clear in which they specifically list items as well. Just so I get to the correct terms, they list the same items. They say similar acts of nature. They list geologic or meteorologic events and say similar acts of nature. So it's quite clear the intent was for a geologic or meteorologic event and not a pandemic. Thank you. I reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
All right. Thank you, sir. All right. We'll hear from the government. Ms. Potty.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. Catherine Potty for the United States. The government is participating here on a very narrow issue. The district court's error in holding that the natural disaster exception unambiguously requires no more than but-for causation. The Warren Act delegates to the Secretary of
the government take a position on whether this is a natural disaster.
No, Your Honor.
How is that if the regulation says indirect result of a natural disaster, the natural disaster exception does not apply?
The government is participating on the narrow question of causation, but is not taking a position on whether the pandemic is a natural disaster. The Department of Labor did post an FAQ page discussing the Warren Act in the context of the pandemic, and particularly the unforeseeable business circumstances exception, recognizing that this broader exception more appropriately addresses the range of circumstances that employers might face as a result of the pandemic.
How does the government interpret any form of, which is before natural disaster?
The government interprets any form of as disasters that are not specifically enumerated in the statute or the regulations, but similar disasters.
Would that exclude a biological issue?
The government's not taking a position on that question, Your Honor.
Do you agree with the question Judge Elrod asked counsel opposite, that if we resolve the first issue in favor of the appellants, we need not reach the issue upon which you are here, or because you are here, you feel we need to reach it?
That's correct, Your Honor, to decide the case. The panel need not address both issues.
Is the government asking us to address it, or
yes.
Leave it alone today?
Yes, Your Honor. The district court's interpretation of the causation standard in the natural disaster exception was incorrect, and the government would like that part of the opinion to be vacated.
Well, if the whole opinion, it wouldn't matter, would it? Are you saying that we need to set the record straight on causation, or are you saying that as long as that's not out there, then it doesn't matter?
It would be the government's preference to set the record straight in line with the Department of Labor's regulations, but we understand that the either question might be dispositive here.
Since the government took the position of limiting its appearance, we likewise could take the position to limit what we say, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
So the government's interpretation is a reasonable one for three reasons. First, it's a very natural reading of the phrase due to, a common law term that courts have recognized for decades is ambiguous with respect to the closeness of the causal connection required. Second, it comports with the Supreme Court's instruction that causal words are presumed to incorporate proximate cause. And third, it makes particular sense in this context when it's attached to a natural disaster exception requirement that is distinguished from a separate and broader unforeseeable business circumstances requirement.
Can you remind us what other courts have held consistent with the district court on the causation?
In this particular context?
In the context of the Warren Act?
There have not been many cases interpreting the natural disaster exception of the Warren Act. I believe that the Benson case out of Florida was on appeal in the 11th Circuit, and that case did follow some of the reasoning in Isom, but the parties have settled that case. In a more recent case, Jones versus Scribe, the district court did defer to the department's regulations with respect to due to.
So there's already a split among other persuasive authorities on this question.
There is some disagreement, and indeed this court has held that due to, in a different context, has required proximate cause, and you know if some courts have held that due to requires proximate cause, and in some contexts and has required a more expansive causation standard in other contexts, then that would imply that that the phrase itself is ambiguous, and the government's regulations are reasonable.
So if the case law is in conflict, should we look to the legislative history?
Yes, Your Honor, but I think the first step would be to look to the department's regulations on the question. Thank you.
All right, thank you. All right, we'll hear from you as well. Mr. Korn.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, my name is David Korn, and I represent the appellee, U.S. Well Services. Many of us lived through Hurricane Katrina or Hurricane Harvey. People died, lots of economic destruction. Hurricanes are a natural disaster, and yet hurricanes are not listed in the Warren Act in the enumerated natural disasters. And yet plaintiff's counsel concedes a hurricane is a natural disaster. What happened on Friday, March 13th, 2020? President Trump declared a national emergency and invoked the National Emergency Act, it's also called the Stafford Act. The Stafford Act defines a major disaster as a natural catastrophe, and it lists things like hurricanes, tornadoes, tsunamis, earthquakes. That same day, Governor Abbott issued a natural disaster. Governor Abbott declared every single county in Texas as a disaster. Regular people like you and me, people that own a company like U.S. Wells, are being told by the federal and the state and local governments that you are in the midst of a natural disaster right now. And then we get calls from our kids, school. Your kids are going home today. Okay, until Monday? No, until 2 weeks, a year, then we go home that weekend. All of us, you, me, the people that run U.S. Well Services, and we're washing our groceries with bleach. We are all freaking out, not knowing what's coming, not knowing how to handle this, scared, worried about our family.
Nobody disputes the massive disruption of normality created by it, but that alone doesn't get you to, quote, natural, quote, disaster. Typically, if you want to say intuitively, one might be speaking of something spontaneous from nature. Dare I say in another context, perhaps in other statutes, might even go so far as to say, quote, acts of God, close quote. Obviously here, the Warren Act doesn't use those terms, but way back when, that framework might have been there. But for these purposes, the notion of something that originates spontaneously from nature, from the clouds, from some elements of which, arguably, man didn't put here by whatever source. So, putting aside the disruption, which we have, we take judicial notice of it, but how does that necessarily, get you to natural disaster? If the president and the governor, they operated based on the statutes or what was available to them because of the emergency nature of it. But why does that necessarily mean that answers the question? I mean, if nothing else there, the governor, the president got to act, right? So they did. But I mean, why does that prove the point for you?
Well, I think we have to figure out, like you said, what does it mean natural? And I would posit to you that the cases that have come out, not just in the Warren Act, because there's only been like two that have addressed whether COVID-19 is natural, but the other cases that have come out in the last 2 years have said COVID-19 is a natural disaster. There's been a case that came out of Pennsylvania where the court specifically said, this is Danny DeVito versus Wolf, COVID-19 is by all definitions a natural disaster. In AB Stable versus MAPS, and this I think answers part of your question, says it is a natural disaster, COVID-19. Why? It's a terrible event that emerged naturally, grew exponentially, and resulted in economic damage and death.
What do you mean if emerged naturally? I mean, what do you think is meant by that, emerged naturally?
Well, I think, and this is beyond my medical pay grade, I'm just going by kind of my gut reasonableness. Viruses and bacteria were here long before I was born, and they've existed, I think, before anybody in this room was alive, before Congress passed the Warren Act.
But what if that there is a hypothesis, and Judge Rosenthal, very fine judge, made some sort of statement about the wet market. She seemed to believe that was important to put in. I don't know if that was in background or if that was, she believed that was important to say that was part of being a natural situation. If it is in fact a lab leak, a manufactured manipulation of naturally occurring thing that got loose, and I'm not saying that it is, but there are these competing hypotheses, why wouldn't that undercut both that court's definition and your position here today? And do you bear the burden of establishing that it was not a man-made situation? Those are two questions.
Gotcha. Okay, I'm gonna get both. So the first question is, you know, why did she bring that up? If you read the transcript of the oral argument, I think she was kind of making sure, just like you all did 5 minutes ago, are you guys arguing that this was like manufactured in a Chinese lab to kind of go out and get the world? And they said no. And so she said in her opinion, they're not saying that, okay? So that's not before the court. And then the second question is, all right, well, does that screw my argument up if there could be some remote chance that humans had involvement in it? And I say no.
Remote? Does it have to be remote?
I'll tell you why not. I don't think anybody here is going to argue that, like, say, a fire consumed Louisiana. More likely California because it's so dry there. Wildfire consumes the whole state, and you know those fires go fast. The one that happened in Southern California, it's like people are running out their homes, it's so fast. Well, that fire could have been started by someone leaving a campfire unattended, and a spark went, and then all of a sudden, the whole state's up in flames.
A number of them were, and they're suing those people and those electric companies. I'm not opining on the merits of those lawsuits. That is exactly what they're doing. They're trying to find the source and suing those groups, either industry or individuals, if they're beyond the scope of their insurance, et cetera. But they are; those are competing theories about certain California wildfires.
And so there's a way to reconcile both points. One is suing for a responsibility tort, but this is a notice to employee statute. And so the exception is giving the employers the ability to kind of duck and move and deal with a natural disaster in the fly so that the business can stay open so that, as U.S. Wells did, they're able to stay afloat and then hire back employees later on.
So you don't have a burden of proving that this was natural as opposed to concocted in a lab? You do or don't have that burden?
I have the burden of showing that the layoffs were due to, it kind of brings us to the second point, due to the natural disaster. And then natural.
Right, so do you have a burden of establishing, at least by preponderance, that it was in the wet market or some other natural, you know, from animals coming over, or do you not have that burden?
I believe the burden would be whether it's natural. Do I have the burden of proving that a virus and a bacteria is natural? No, I don't think I have that burden. I think there's some things that we just have to go with common sense. I don't have to prove that a hurricane or drought is natural. We all just know that it's natural. So I think
there's... So we just know that this is natural? So are you saying, would it be natural even if it was manufactured in a lab and then accidentally got loose? Would that be natural?
That's a good question. Let me put this hypothetical that we all can relate to. In the wake of Hurricane Katrina, the real big damage was the flooding that resulted from the levee break-in, and we were all out of our homes for months and months. The levee break, you could argue, was caused by some engineering flaw in the levee system. It wasn't necessarily the direct result of the hurricane. We argue it was due to the hurricane. I mean, if but for the hurricane, the levee wouldn't have broke, and we wouldn't have had a natural disaster. So I don't think the presence of a human touching it or being involved with it in some way...
Creating it. It's not just creating it. That's a difference.
Well,
does that matter?
I guess the question is, if something is created, can it still be natural?
Exactly. Example would be, what about, God forbid, an atomic bomb is dropped and there is fallout from the atomic bomb, and so all the businesses are shutting down and laying people off. Is that a natural disaster? Because obviously it's a human directing an atomic bomb.
Well, I think we have to go back to the Warren Act to answer that question and consider the context and the framework and the structure, which they agree we should look at. And so think about it this way. We're going to come back to your question from an indirect way. The unforeseeable business circumstances requires that the employer give as much notice as possible. It says they have to prove that the layoff is caused by the business circumstances, that were not reasonably foreseeable. The Warren Act has a whole different paradigm, a different framework. It doesn't have any reasonably foreseeable element, and it doesn't say it has to prove that the layoff is caused by, just that it is due to. And so I believe that the Warren Act is contemplating in a natural disaster, employers don't have time to kind of figure out, okay, let's plan a date in the future and we'll do everything by the statute. We'll wait, 6 weeks, give everybody time. In a natural disaster, it's chaos. And the government, in its response, they gave an additional 8 weeks of $600 plus unemployment under the CARES Act. Then they gave an additional, the pandemic unemployment insurance, they gave an additional remedies, and their actions were the response of a government responding to a natural disaster. The CARES Act was passed, additional $1,200 payments, $1,700 payments were made. Employees received these additional unemployment insurance, not for just the 60-day period that they weren't.
I'm not going to ask any more questions about this because I still don't really know what your answer is to either if it's created in a lab. It sounds like you may be saying that's still natural, and maybe the atomic bomb hypothetical, that's natural even if it's done by a human pushing the button. But I don't know for sure what your answer was to either of those questions, and I'm just being frank with you in case you want to give more specific answers, but perhaps you do not wish to, and I'm not going to ask you any more questions about it.
I want to try to answer the question. It's a difficult one because ultimately your example about the atomic bomb, well, an atomic bomb is made out of elements that occur in nature, and the COVID-19 virus, let's say it was made by some really smart lab person in China, well, they would have had to create it from natural elements. They're not Houdinis that can magically create something. They are taking materials in nature. So I think that I understand your question, and I don't know ultimately the answer of how far down deep do we have to dig into Like, what does natural really mean at the end of the day? Is a natural disaster encompass things that start off with nature? I think the focus, because I don't know the answer, and I don't know that anybody knows the answer, the focus is on the disaster part of it. Yeah, a natural disaster, but everybody here is telling us it's a natural disaster. We think it's a natural disaster. The people in Texas aren't really considering, oh, well, was this something that started off in a Chinese lab? All they know is they're told, clients are saying, shut down the business. All they know is they have to, like, all their workers are going to be home this weekend. They're not reacting to the sort of minutia of your question, which is, well, did it really begin from a natural thing, or was the man-made component of it, does that destroy the natural part of the definition?
Do you want to talk about but-for causation?
I would. I would have prepared for it, so sure, yes. So again, we're going back to the structure. Ultimately, the court said but-for means because of. It's sort of like how I interpret it. What does due to mean? It means because of. And because of, as interpreted by the courts, is the but-for standard review. And I think my strongest argument on this point is going back to my earlier comment that in the unforeseeable business circumstance exception, they use the phrase is caused by. So they are requiring direct causation in the unforeseeable business circumstances, but they're not requiring it in the natural disaster. In the natural disaster, they don't say is caused by, they say is due to. That to me is a clear indication that Congress was trying to give an easier way for an employer to take advantage of the natural disaster exception. In an unforeseeable business circumstance, you might find out that the bank is not lending you money. Well, you can kind of see that happening, and so you can pivot and try to get funding from another source. In the natural disaster exception, everything kind of happens at once. There's really no time to pivot and move. And so are we going to get bogged down with, oh, did you lose all of your business because of this happening, or was it just due to the pandemic, the global disaster? And so I believe that the court was correct in finding that due to is the correct standard, but for is interpreted by the courts. And Your Honor, the case cited by opposing counsel, and I think it was brought up by one of you, was that the Fifth Circuit had ruled in this other case that, oh, due to means proximate cause. Well, in that case, it was interpreting an insurance policy. And in that case, the court said, for an insurance policy exclusion, we need to give the benefit of the doubt to the insured because the insurance company drafted the contract. And so in that case, I think it's distinguishable from this case where you're not being asked today to interpret a insurance policy that's been drafted by one party and presented to the other. You're being asked to interpret a law that is written for the benefit of everybody, all citizens and companies. So I think you have to go back to the plain language of the statute. And the judge said, I don't need to go to the Department of Labor's regulation on this. I'm looking at it and I know what due to means. Due to means, why did the court here close oral argument? Why, Judge Stewart, you said it's nice to see everybody back in the courtroom. Well, you closed the courtroom for a while due to COVID. Yeah, you closed the courtroom technically because a judge said that you were closing the courtroom, and maybe because of a stay-at-home order, but what would we all say? We'd say you closed it due to COVID. Why were the kids out of school? It was due to COVID. I think that Congress clearly set forth the standard under which natural disasters would apply, not the unforeseeable business circumstances. That is a harder standard because of the language.
If we were to go with you on this point, would we be creating a circuit split? I think the D.C. Circuit, the 10th Circuit, and the 6th Circuit have held to the contrary. Am I wrong on that?
Well, you're right and you're wrong. You're very good at finding the actual split in issues.
Thank you.
Sure. There are the courts that have looked at this issue in context with the WARN Act. We have two district court cases in other circuits that are saying it should be the proximate cause standard that the DOL and the plaintiffs are advocating. Then we have two other district courts. One is Judge Rosenthal's opinion, and one is In Re Art Van Furniture, which is a case that we submitted just last week in connection with our Rule 28J letter. And that was a case that came out and looked at, is COVID-19 a natural disaster? And they brought up the issue of, is it in a man-made lab? And kind of went through that analysis, picking up on what Judge Rosenthal had said. And they concluded that COVID-19 is a natural disaster under the WARN Act. And to answer the question, they came and said, we agree with the position that due to means because of, which should be interpreted as but for. So to get around to your question, sometimes it takes me longer than it should, Judge Elrod, but to answer your question, you wouldn't be creating a circuit split. You would be the first ever court of appeal to rule on the burden of proof in the natural disaster exception ever. So I don't think it's a split. You would be, if another court of appeal upholds one of the other district court opinions, then there would be a split. I see I've come to the end of my time. Thank you. And on behalf of the appellee, request that you affirm the district court in all of its rulings. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Korn. Back to you, Mr. Assad.
These are exceptions to the WARN Act, and they need to be narrowly construed. But before I begin, I'd like to talk a little bit about the statutory language that I didn't have time to speak about. The statute is titled, the subchapter is titled Reduction of Notice Period. Under the WARN Act, unforeseen business circumstances, you could reduce the notice to 60 days notice. Under natural disaster exemption, it says no notice under this chapter, under that subparagraph. However, Section 3 says, an employer relying on the subsection shall give as much notice as is practicable, which means even under natural disaster, you still need to give notice. Natural disaster is an unforeseen business circumstance. All natural disasters are unforeseen business circumstances. Not all unforeseen business circumstances are natural disasters. So the question is, what's the difference? The difference is, if you can provide notice, you need to provide notice. If it's even one day or one week, you need to provide notice, even under the natural disaster exception. There are certain circumstances in which you cannot provide notice. When an earthquake swallows your facility and there's no facility left, a hurricane destroys and you can't even get to work, even email and everything's gone, there's no place to work, or there's destruction of property, then you can't provide notice. That is the exception for the natural disaster exception. COVID-19 can never be a cause of people not being able to go to work. Governor Abbott of Texas gave 2 days notice before a government shutdown of schools and bars and restaurants, schools already closed. And in fact, the regulations even address this issue. The regulations under 20 CFR 639.9 specifically state a government-ordered closing of an employment site that occurs without prior notice also may be an unforeseeable business circumstance. Looking at these exceptions narrowly, the question to be asked is, does a natural disaster cause the company have there's no time to react? And in this case, under COVID-19, there is time to react. Governments, and by the way, just as a side note, the government shutdown of businesses did not even apply to U.S. Wells. They were exempt because they're in the energy sector producing oil. And a couple of things I'd like to state. If we were in today's world and COVID-19 hit today, there would be no mass layoff at oil being $100 a barrel. This was a financial decision based on the price of oil, based not off of COVID-19. And under defendant's argument, anything related to COVID-19, even now, COVID-19 caused a reduction in workforce in China, which caused a reduction in chips, which caused a shortage supply of chips, which caused inflation, which caused the higher prices for companies, and therefore which caused the layoff. Under defendant's theory, that would be a but-for cause and without providing any notice under the statute. And that cannot be the intent of the statute, in which the intent is to protect employees, to give government, local governments the opportunity to help these employees to retrain. If notice can be provided, then notice should be provided. If a situation of a natural disaster in which notice is an impossibility to give notice, then notice that then that is a natural disaster. And COVID-19 just doesn't fall under that category because notice can always be provided. And that's why the Department of Regulations said it has to be a direct cause and an indirect cause. They still have their remedy. They still have unforeseen business circumstances. And thousands of companies that laid off people prior to the 60 days notice used the unforeseen business circumstance exception. They still provided advance notice, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 days. And also with respect to the Department of Labor FAQs that came out, they said the COVID-19 falls under the unforeseen business circumstance. The reason why the defendant is making this argument today is because they failed to provide notice, which is not before this court. The district court did not certify that last question of whether or not you have to provide notice. But I think the fact that notice is required no matter what, the natural disaster, it shows that the natural disaster exception is the ability to provide notice and when. And it should be no 60 days notice is needed under a natural disaster because the company no longer physically exists. And another side note also is COVID is still going on. And in this company, U.S. Wells, a year and a half later after the date of the first layoff, laid off people again and provide notice under COVID-19. So companies can provide notice under the unforeseen business circumstances or 60 days notice. And that's a different issue before the court. And that's all the time I have. And I thank you for this time. And it was a pleasure arguing before you all. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, sir. All right. Thank you to all counsel on the case for your briefing and the oral argument. Obviously, it's an intriguing question. We'll size it up and get it decided as soon as we can. Thank you. You may be excused.